This is the Ontario Family Law Podcast, featuring issues related to marriage, separation, divorce, and even some child welfare issues. It's a companion to the book, The Basics of Ontario Family Law, which is available on Amazon or by calling 416-446-5847. My name is John Schumann. I'm a certified specialist in family law. I'm a family lawyer, mediator, arbitrator, and collaborative lawyer, and I am the partner managing the family law group at Devery Smith Frank LLP in Toronto.
Today on the podcast, sole custody, joint custody, parallel parenting, shared parenting. When is each one the best? Today's podcast is a live recording of a lecture that I gave to legal professionals on the issues of parenting after separation and how judges decide what type of parenting situation to order in high conflict custody access cases. And the version of this podcast is available on iTunes. The slides should appear on your screen. That includes the sites for all the cases that I mentioned in this podcast. Here's that lecture.
Now, what does the term custody mean? And I just go over it because it's a thing that a lot of clients, when they first come in, don't know what it means. They think custody means where the kids live, and it's not really where the kid lives. It means who makes the important decisions. And when you drill down what the important decisions are, there are basically four of them. They are education, which is what school the child goes to, and if the child, the school's picked, then if the child is in a special program at school, then they go into that special program. So whether the child's in a French immersion classroom or a regular classroom or in a special needs classroom or in a regular classroom, or if there's going to be an identification student. Those are the type of issues that play down to education. Now there's major medical, and major medical, we're talking about major medical. We're not talking about, you know, getting injured on the playground and having to go get your arm set. This is like cancer, needing surgery, hit by the bus type of things, and who makes the decision when that happens. And religion is another one, where you have parents who can't decide or have to decide what religion the child's going to be up until the time the child picks. And the last one is extracurricular activities, which comes into it because if anyone here has got kids who are involved in sports on an elite level, they know that occupies all the kids' time, and that can affect the child's time with the parent and also affect their education, one of the most frequent contention, because really the first three, you know, most people, even if the kids are young, are going to go through their lives without ever having to make a decision along these or getting into a debate about this. And that's where you get into it. People have these debates with people who are looking for fights, not the normal people who are dealing with these normal kids
after separation.
The only other thing to know is that custody, the term custody, well, it means who makes decisions for us. It means something different under the Hague Convention. And if you want the child returned from someplace else under the Hague Convention, your client is significantly advantaged if they have custody, whatever that term means. It can also mean a bit different when you're traveling to some other countries, when they go through border security in other countries. They want to know whether the parent traveling has custody. And that can mean who is the person who has physical custody of the child, which is what it meant in Canada a long time ago. But some places it's important to know, and if you need to get a child returned, so then the Hague Convention applies. So if you've got if your client is worried about a flight risk, the child going off to some place like Greece, which is a member of the Hague Convention but not close, then it may matter as to whether or not you have an order for sole custody or joint custody, because of the parent who stays behind has got sole custody or joint custody, they have an easier case to make under the Hague Convention to have the child returned. So why do people fight over custody? And this is I just said those decisions almost never matter, but the term custody is a really hot issue people fight over, and they do fight over it. And the most important is the label, because parents want to say they have custody of their kids. They don't want to say that the other parent is custody because it seems to somehow diminish them as a parent. Really, it shouldn't, but it's important to people as a label. So that's the main driving force. And sometimes you can settle cases by avoiding the term custody altogether or by doing joint custody, by giving one parent all the decision-making authority, just having that sort of wording, because that gets around the who has custody label. Remember that joint custody means that both parents have to agree on the big decisions. And so if you have a joint custody agreement, then who has that label matters, especially if you've got people who are high conflict, because in high conflict, they both have to agree, and they can never agree, that can lead to some big problems. And that is where you get into the unfortunate situations where you've got a child who has had a big deterioration in their health, sudden deterioration in their health, like being hit by the bus, and the parents are literally fighting over which surgeon does the emergency surgery. And that's not helpful to anyone. It's definitely not the kid's best. If you've got high conflict, you may need someone to have final say. What people are really interested in when they're talking about custody is parenting time. And parenting time has, there's a few different definitions of it. I mean, the usual thing that we talked about a long time ago is now called primary residence, secondary residence. So you have a parent with whom the child primarily resides and another parent with whom the child secondarily resides on weekends and maybe once during the week. So you can get around the custody term by using primary residence and secondary residence, although some people don't even like that, just use the term, the schedule. But you get into some specific terms that have significance in the law and the case law when you talk about shared custody or shared parenting. And this means that the time is divided roughly equally between the parties. And this becomes important, as you just heard about, when it comes to child support because of the 40% rule. It also becomes important in terms of the relationship the parents have with the children when someone wants to move away. It's very hard for one parent to move away when there's a shared custody regime. But shared custody does not mean, as some people think when they first walk in, that kids split their time 1 week, 1 week. And that doesn't work for young kids and often doesn't work for older kids, but it means that there's equal sharing of time. So a regime where you have Monday, Tuesday with mom, Tuesday, Wednesday with dad, and the parents split Friday, Saturday, Sunday is still a shared custody arrangement. Split custody, as you just heard, is where you have one child or more living with one parent and another child or more living with the other parent, and it's like they both have the primary parenting, but they each have their own children they look after. Either one of these arrangements or the arrangement with a primary residence can be combined with parallel parenting. And parallel parenting is this way that judges try to avoid conflict. When you've got two parents who are involved in the children's lives and they want to continue them, but they want them to have decision making. Parallel parenting is when you say, parent A has got decision making over education, parent B has got decision making over healthcare, parent A has got decision making over religion, parent B has got decision making over extracurricular activities. And the idea is that these parents, and usually do this when there's a lot of conflict, do not have to agree on anything. They can impose their will over their area or their sphere of influence over the other parent, and the other parent has got their sphere of influence over some other issues, and they can impose their will on the first parent. And you can, if in bad situations, have a cold war where they both use their sphere of influences against each other, or hopefully they both ignore each other and avoid putting the kids in front of conflict and just make the decisions that are appropriate. So the next thing is where we're on the case law, and that is where do judges order joint or shared custody? The rule, if you ask a judge about when do you order joint custody, when do you order sole custody, and judges will say that when there's high conflict, they order sole custody 80% of the time. Obviously, they also often order sole custody when one parent doesn't care or one parent has historically not cared. If you heard a judge say that and then you did a case, went on Westlaw or Quicklaw and started looking at cases, you might be a bit confused, because here are a list of Court of Appeal and appeal decisions where judges ordered joint custody in high conflict cases. There are a number of them, and if you went over them and said, and you looked at them and said, well, if I looked at these Court of Appeal cases, and when could I tell about when a court should order joint custody in high conflict situations? And if you looked at that and you looked at the Court of Appeal decision, you would have no idea. There is no consistency whatsoever. The Court of Appeal is taking a principled approach to this, and they are leaving it up that this has to be decided on a case-by-case basis on what's in the individual child's best interest. So we're not giving general rules about when shared custody should or shared parenting should be ordered or joint custody should be ordered in high-conflict situations. There are, however, some considerations about when judges will order shared custody or joint custody in high conflict situations. Generally, domestic violence is really hard to find a case where you'll get joint custody where one parent's beating up the other. It's also really hard to find a case of joint custody where you have one parent who's manipulative, controlling, and would basically make the order for joint custody not work because they would just impose their will in any event. It's also difficult to have a shared parenting situation where the parents live far away from each other. The kids have to be able to go to the same school, have to be able to see the same friends. So when you've got one parent living in Milton and the other parent living in Whitby, shared parenting doesn't usually work. Aside from those sorts of situations, or a parent being really, truly incompetent, the only other predictor of when you're going to get a joint custody or shared custody situation is where you have one parent who is deliberately undermining the parenting of the other parent, or deliberately undermining the other parent's role in the child's life, and that parent has probably got their back up against the wall in the courtroom and they're going to lose. So when you've got two parents who are both being equally nasty and trying to destroy each other, that's not so big a factor in terms of where custody will end up. But one parent who is being alienating, whether it's clinical parental alienation or just acting as if to try to achieve that result, there's not going to be an order for joint parenting or joint custody. So what comes down to the, I just sort of give you a pretty brief about how judges decide, but that gives you some clue as to what you might want to put into your court documents. But one thing I always think is important to put in your court documents, and when I do pleadings in custody access cases, or when I review pleadings in custody access cases, one thing I always do is I get out Section 24 of the Children's Law Reform Act, and I look at what it says. Because this is the best interest of the child test, and this says the factors that the court is required to consider. So regardless of what all the court decisions say, there is a list under Section 24 of all the things the judge has to consider. And when you're doing a pleading, you want to make sure you include why each of these factors and why it benefits your client. So the client, the child is closely bonded with your client, they have close emotional ties with your client, the child views and preferences are to be with your client, your client is better able to meet the child's special education needs or whatever the child's special needs are. Go through and to as much as possible plead the facts that relate to each one of these sections under the Children's Law Reform Act. You'll notice that violence and abuse has got a special category brought up on its own. And so violence and abuse is particularly important in terms of regard to parenting, and that can be any type of violence or abuse. So if you represent the client who has been violent or abusive, you're kind of stuck on this one. The best thing you can do is get your client to not be violent and abusive anymore by taking some anger management courses or doing some parenting courses, changing their ways, getting therapy or whatever, because that's going to be a big factor that's going to weigh against them in their custody case.
That was my live lecture on parenting situations after separations and how a judge decides among them. It was delivered live to a group of legal professionals. I hope you enjoyed listening to this edition of the podcast. Watch for more live recorded editions of the podcast on child custody issues.
This is the Ontario Family Law Podcast. My name is John Schumann. You can reach me at www.devrylaw.ca. That's www.devrylaw.ca. Or by calling 416-446-5847. We will talk again soon about other family law topics. Thanks again for listening to the Ontario Family Law Podcast.